much they claim to be on the side of women, they are actually on the side of drug dealers, abortionists, and human traffickers. That's just the reality of what the bills tell us.
That's the voice of Victoria Cobb, president of the Family Foundation, who this week gives us a sobering update on the state of the culture war in Virginia. But she also offers hope on how we can change the tide for the Commonwealth and the rest of the nation. Plus, we get Victoria's on-the-ground report from the Supreme Court's chemical abortion hearing. Welcome to Speak Up Virginia, equipping you to speak up on the life, family, and freedom issues that matter most to you. From the Family Foundation, I'm your host, Candy Cushman, with our president, Victoria Cobb. Well, welcome back to Speak Up Virginia. I hope everybody had a wonderful Easter and good time with your family. Today, we have something a little different for you, but I think you're really going to enjoy it, and that is Victoria is going to give us a state of the state. We're going to let you listen in on a speech that she gave that just gives an update on the status of the culture war in Virginia. Now, you may have recently suffered through President Biden's State of the Union, and you have our sympathies if you did that. But I just want to guarantee you that this state of the state, as opposed to the union, is going to be a much more pleasant experience for you and inspiring. So we're going to be bringing that to you in just a little bit. But first, Victoria, I did just want to get your take on the recent Supreme Court, U.S. Supreme Court hearing on the chemical abortion pills, because you were right there on the ground.
Yeah, we did have a rally outside the U.S. Supreme Court for the case that we've talked about here on the podcast before as it's worked its way up through the Fifth Circuit. But basically, this is the case. It's the FDA versus the Alliance for Hippocratic Medicine. And what it is a bunch of doctors and associations that are coming to the court, and they're challenging the FDA. And they're challenging the FDA because the FDA has both rushed the process of chemical abortions being approved, and also rolled back the safety protocols that were put in place with these pills, both during the Obama administration and then particularly during COVID, took away the in-person visit, took away a lot of the things that really were in the FDA data that said this is how it should be done. And so all that to say, they had their big moment in court yesterday, and we were there on the outside, and, this is a big deal. This is the first big abortion case since Dobbs, yeah. Really.
All right. Well, I've been seeing in the media all these predictions that the Supreme Court justices seem skeptical of the challenge, that they might reject it. What's your read on all that?
Yeah, and I don't want to get too much into legalese, but people do need to understand that in order for somebody to bring a case to the U.S. Supreme Court, to go through this, in order to sue, you have to have something called standing, which just simply means that you actually have to have injury by what's happened, and that the court has to have the ability to redress it. They have to be able to do something about it. And so that bar is the first piece before you get to the merits of the case. And so a lot of if people listened to the oral arguments or they heard clips on the news, a lot of it was about that issue. And these doctors are saying, look, we have conscience rights. We didn't sign up to do abortions. We're working in the ERs. But because of your removed safety protocols, all these women are coming to the emergency room and they literally need us to complete their abortions. And that's not what we believe as healers. And we would all sort of agree with that, that abortion is not healing, that this is almost the opposite of what they signed up for in their careers, and that those rights are really important. And so that's a lot of what was discussed in the courtroom.
Yeah, and so if these doctors don't have standing of these medical groups, then who can challenge the FDA, right?
Yeah, and Clarence Thomas brought that question out. He really brought that to light. Like, okay, somebody has to be able to hold accountable these government agencies when they do things. And seems like, you know, we would say, like, who else? And I think the government's position was, yeah, no one can. I mean, that was really what they came back with, was like, nah, you can't.
Well, I have a concern about that on two levels. One, how do we have religious freedom, conscience protections, or convictions protections for doctors that don't want to be forced to be complicit with the abortion process? And then just in general, you know, who can challenge the FDA? It seems like it would take away the average person's ability that's affected by drugs, even if it's not the chemical abortion pill.
That's exactly right. I saw a fantastic interview with Kristen Wagner, who's the head of Alliance Defending Freedom. This was the group that was part of, you know, arguing the oral arguments. And her point on this media interview was, this is the same FDA that used to say opioids were safe. And now we know people are addicted to opioids, a huge problem. And so her point was, it doesn't have to be about this pill, but you. And I think the average American wants to know that somebody can hold the FDA accountable.
Yeah. Because as we've talked about before, we don't have to get into it in this segment, but we've talked about before, it's not hypothetical. We have documented yes. painful complications that women experience from these pills. So, you know, with that said, I will just mention one of the more bizarre demonstrations that was outside the court that day. Apparently, there was this little abortion pill robot rolling around dispensing pills. Let's just watch a real quick clip of that from Daily Signal.
We dispensed our abortion pill robot. We did a demonstration this morning where we dispensed mifepristone. One of the people in our group took the pill to demonstrate how safe it is.
They took the pill right here.
There are doctors operating these robots that are counseling patients and are legally allowed to prescribe mifepristone. So that's why multiple people from our organization have taken the pills and they've been counseled by a physician who's providing them.
And multiple people here today have taken them that aren't pregnant?
Yeah.
Wow. Is there any kind of health effects from that?
No.
No?
That's the point of the demonstration, to show that it's safe.
All right, Victoria, what do you think? Zero health effects?
I can't even fathom. But again, you watch this and you see they are trying to make this sound like it's taking a Tylenol. Take it for whatever reason, whenever. You're not even pregnant. These women that took it outside the courtroom, theoretically, they were not even pregnant. And so you're not even taking the drug for the purposes of anything. So yeah. I can't even, but they're trying to normalize it to the point of it being Tylenol. You don't need a doctor. You can get it through your, I mean, this was the point that I was making outside the courthouse when I was speaking, was the idea that women don't deserve a doctor's appointment, that they don't deserve it, you know, that they can just get their pills out of a mailbox. You don't even consult.
Or a robot.
You don't even, or from a robot. That's exactly what I was just about to say. It's like this idea that you don't even need a pharmacist to cross-check what you're taking, you know, women deserve more. And yeah. they deserve more than abortion, period. But they definitely should not be put in harm's way because we're doing this so haphazardly and promoting it like it's Tylenol.
Yeah, and it's just, it is so dystopian, this robot medical care. It's like, I thought it looked like Wall-E going around dispensing pills. It's just weird.
Yeah, I don't think there's any question that this is not how women want to receive health care. It's one thing, and I mean, you've seen a robot like maybe in a hospital, but all around that robot are nurses and doctors coming in and checking on you. They might be, you know, coming in on something very basic. And we're going to get to more machines in science. But this is, we're talking like we're removing any medical judgment from this whole process. And that is what I think people should be horrified by.
Okay, so what happens now?
Well, so we're going to wait. The Supreme Court will review this. They will think about it. They'll read, actually, there were 39 briefs on our side, I believe. So they have a lot of paperwork around this where people are presenting arguments. A lot of people don't realize what happens in the courtroom that we get to see or hear, if you streamed it or saw the news, is a really small picture of the whole case, right? So they have all this paperwork around it that people present legal arguments. And so it takes time. And so we don't expect any kind of result, any kind of decision until the controversial cases always come out at the end of June. So while we're all, you know, ready to take our vacation and go to the beach, that's when this thing always drops. So very end of June or early July, we will get a decision from the U.S. Supreme Court. And but, we certainly hope it's good.
Yeah. In the meantime, you can be praying for our justices because this is going to be a momentous decision. All right. Well, getting into the state of the state, I really love this speech from you, Victoria, that we're about to play because she gives a really great broad overview of the forces at play, both good and evil, in our own state, in the Commonwealth. And you kind of talk about how on one side you've got forces for death and destruction, and then on the flip side of that, for good, you've got life and human flourishing, and how those are kind of clashing, and what's happening with that, and you give some details about that, make it concrete for us. So what made you decide to give kind of a state of the state?
Well, I mean, you know, this was right after, as you mentioned, the State of the Union, and my, you know, I just noticed that you never really get a very accurate view of what's happening, because everybody has an agenda when they're delivering those things, and so I kind of just started thinking about Virginia is a real, we're really at a crossroads. And so it's a very mixed bag of what is going on. And I just thought it would be interesting to kind of lay out the good and the bad, because I don't want people to take one view or the other, because either view would be sort of unrealistic in isolation. Yeah. Does that make
That's
sense?
That's good. Yeah. All right. Without further ado, let's hear Victoria talking about the state of the Commonwealth.
I don't know if you got a chance to watch the State of the Union a couple weeks ago. And if you did, I'm actually sorry. But no kidding. I mean, these things can be important, or they can at least be entertaining if you got to watch Speaker Johnson's facial reactions behind our president. But I was thinking about it, and I thought it would be really nice if we ever got the actual state of the union when we watched that speech, right? Like if it were, you know, actually what is the state of our nation? And, you know, in catching glimpses of it, I really began to think, like, what would be the state of Virginia if somebody gave that wasn't sort of, you know, if they gave it honestly and there wasn't political aspirations behind what they were saying? And so I really started to think about it, and I determined that the state of Virginia really might depend on whether you're a pessimist or an optimist. So, you know, if the glass is half empty, we live in a very divided commonwealth where the disagreements are not minor. They are fundamental worldview differences, and it is a clear clash. We have representatives of both worldviews, the Judeo-Christian worldview and the secular humanist worldview, down at the General Assembly. And when they put forward their beliefs, you really see this up close and personal. This past session, it truly seemed to boil down to one side advocating for death and destruction, and the other side advocating for life and human flourishing. And on the one hand, you had the liberal majority who refused to hold fentanyl drug dealers responsible for the deaths that their greed caused. Do you know that even in California, Governor Newsom is actually considering at least holding these people accountable? And it wasn't just deadly drug dealers that they didn't want to hold accountable. They didn't want to hold abortionists accountable either. In legislation that is currently sitting on the governor's desk, abortionists and pharmacists who participate in illegal abortions in other states, so they send chemical abortions into Texas, for example, would receive no penalty by our Board of Medicine. And even better than that, Virginia would like harbor these folks, and the Texas governor couldn't even come after them for their illegal actions in Texas. They did just about everything they could this session to shield abortionists from any consequences of their action and to try to line up Virginia to become the abortion capital of the South. No matter how much they claim to be on the side of women, they are actually on the side of drug dealers, abortionists, and human traffickers. That's just the reality of what the bills tell us. The leftists in the General Assembly made sure that we knew that they neither value life in the womb, nor do they value life in advanced stages, as Lieutenant Governor Winston Sears was just talking about, when they advanced literally a bill that would have had doctors help assist in taking human life in our Commonwealth. Liberals worked hard to commercialize marijuana and to put slot machines in every single one of your neighborhoods, trying to profit from those that are vulnerable to addiction. If there was something that could be monetized, they absolutely tried to do it, including attempting to create rent-a-womb surrogacy situations in Virginia where third-party companies come into market to poor women for one of the most valuable things they possess, their own womb. The divide isn't just even on matters of life and death or human exploitation. Opposing worldviews means that there are really very opposing views about the family and the government. Legislators on the left believe that the government, not the family, ought to be raising our children. Specifically, rather than parents knowing when a child needs to learn about mental health issues and suicide, a bill currently sits on the governor's desk as I speak that would have school staff teach these things to children in elementary and middle school. As a mom with a child in both elementary and a child in middle school, I contend that only I know when those kids are ready for those conversations. And furthermore, the very last people I want talking and teaching my children about mental health are people who think there are 100 genders and who think that affirming gender confusion prevents suicide. This is not a Virginia we want to see. Last week, I hope you saw it, a study actually came out using data from California that showed that the suicide rate actually doubles for men who use surgery to better identify as women. Doubles. And then there's just these moments of pure irony that expose the worldview clash, where in one moment, liberals pass bills that prohibit the decoying of cats, but won't pass a bill that stops children from mutilating their own bodies when they are confused around their gender. Or they claim to be all for women. They are the party of women, if you listen to them. And in a bill about pregnancy, they actually replace women with birthing persons.
Yeah, yeah.
And I would say this, finally, one of the most revealing aspects of this clash is not actually the bills that get the prime time, the ones that you see on the news. It's actually the bills that quietly get shelved and hope that no one notices. I feel compelled in this moment to point out that there's a deep divide, not just between parties or ideologies, but actually a deep divide within the Democratic Party themselves. Did you know that under the leadership of our Vice President Todd Gyaki of Government Relations, the Family Foundation actually helped create and get introduced a resolution expressing support for the State of Israel and condemning the actions of Hamas? Now, let me guess, you didn't actually know that because the Democrats put it in the Rules Committee and left it there without a hearing. Did you know that there was actually a bill in this General Assembly that was put forward that would make sure that our tax-funded universities, public colleges and universities, did not have DEI programs that in any way promoted anti-Semitism? You probably didn't know that either because the Democrats put it in the Rules Committee and didn't give it a hearing. And did you know there was a budget amendment trying to do the same thing? Yeah, you probably didn't, because they forced it out of the process without a single conversation about it. You see, that political party has a problem on their hands right now because, and I will say this, with recent revelations that we've seen about UVA spending $20 million on DEI, it kind of seems like it's a worthy mission to make sure that none of that goes to promote anti-Semitism. They clearly have a segment of their base that actually they're trying to appease that disdains Israel. So in one sense, I would say this, the state of our Commonwealth could, if we had an address about it, it could be really grim. But I'm a glass half full kind of girl. So we're gonna talk about why the glass is actually half full and what it looks like when we look at things that way. First of all, biblical worldview was put forward by a number of hardworking, noble legislators. Legislation was supported that continued to put parents in charge of the battles over sexually explicit material in their schools, to save girls' sports, to stop sex selection in abortion and rescue babies born alive after a failed abortion, and more. Next, I would note that for the first time in a very long time, we have Christians in the office of governor, lieutenant governor, attorney general, people that are seeking the will of God for their actions. And I believe nearly all, not quite all, but nearly all of these terrible bills will likely be vetoed by this governor. And that is something to be thankful for. Also share with you that our newly established church ambassador network, led by Pastor Mike Morisi, is now making real impact in our capital. Bringing pastors from across Virginia, Mike created nearly 500 connections between pastors and legislators during that 60-day period that our General Assembly was in session. One senator described these visits by saying, "They fill my heart with hope and peace that he is in control." That's what our legislators need to hear, and the Church Ambassador Network is making that happen. And all is not lost, even though I painted a bleak picture of the General Assembly this year. And while we didn't see the best ideas make it to the finish line, right? So we had good ideas, they didn't get there. I do need to remind us that it really was something like 3,500 total votes in just a few key areas of Virginia, and we would have had biblical majorities, people that believed biblical worldview in both the House and the Senate, if that election had just changed by 3,500 votes. That's the size of Gary's church. That is really not undoable. I mean, maybe it's probably a lot bigger than that, but at least the size of Cornerstone Chapel. I know, and certainly what it reaches on the, everybody that I know that attends your church from not anywhere near your church. So think about that. We should be encouraged by that, because I know that sometimes, and maybe particularly up here, it can feel like Virginia is filled with all leftists. I get that. But that's just not actually the case. It's actually a very divided Commonwealth with room for us to make impact. And if you aren't encouraged by that, be encouraged by the way people are engaging on the issues. This year, the Family Foundation, under the direction of our Vice President of Grassroots, Candy Cushman, and her new assistant, Grace, who's here as well, the Family Foundation held not one, not two, but three different advocacy days. And they were very, very successful. First of all, we hosted entire schools to come down to the Capitol for Kids Deserve More Day, where administrators and schools told legislators about the importance of our EISTC scholarship program. What is that? That's Virginia's school choice, educational choice program that we need to preserve, promote, and build on. And it was a wonderful day. About 5,000 kids are served by this program, and these school teachers made it clear that this is essential in the lives of these kids. Next, we brought all the mama bears down to the Capitol to ensure that parental rights weren't overrun by public school administrators and others who claim that they know what's best for our kids. And we even included Michelle Blair, Sage's mom. Hopefully you've heard the story of Sage, a young girl who struggled with her gender, and because the school hid that from her parents, she fell victim to sex trafficking. And I will never stop being proud of Josh Hutzler on our Law Center team, who actually was the guy who helped return Sage to her mom. Also thrilled to give Doug Bottoms, who's here somewhere, I haven't seen where he, oh, okay, somewhere over here, back over there. We were thrilled to be able to give him, a dad who's here with us tonight, an opportunity to share a difficult story when his kindergartner came home from public school and told the family at the dinner table, basically, that he'd been taught how a daddy can become a mommy by a transgender parent of a classmate of his. These stories, though, must be told because they secure parental rights. They help people understand why we have to fight these battles, and they have to be told so they prevent the next child's innocence from being taken in the classroom. Our Commonwealth is actually full of people who love God, who love what God loves, and hate what God hates. Do we need more? Sure. Is that where you come in? Yes, it is. Some of you are already fully engaged, many with our Speak Up Fairfax team who are diligently working to hold back the tide, especially regarding the evil in our own school system up here. But I know that sometimes that gets discouraging, the battle with our school system, whether it's in Fairfax, over the fact that they just hired some sexual deviant to be the expert over whether books are appropriate in libraries, or whether it's still the battle in Loudoun over what's going on in the bathroom. I know it can get challenging that a school board could still cover up an assault, and yet we still have this terrible policy. But take heart. At the Family Foundation, we are undertaking a statewide strategy, several of them, to actually get a handle on the left-wing pull of these school boards. You see, at first we actually thought these problems existed because there weren't enough conservatives in majorities on school boards. So then our Family Foundation Action came along, our political arm, and ran candidate trainings, and we were successful in getting some more conservatives put on these school boards. But then we learned that the problem ran actually deeper than that. You see, as it turns out, no matter who's elected, they're immediately placed into a left-wing indoctrination program hosted by the Virginia School Board Association. They're told to go along and get along, and many weren't finding any counter advice of how to take a different path as a new school board member. So with the help of Sherry Story, who's in the back of the room there, the Family Foundation was able to help start a Virginia School Board Members Alliance, an alternative to the Virginia School Board Association, and a new base for conservative training for our school board members. Regularly, our Law Center, the Founding Freedoms Law Center, actually helps be able to be part of the training of these new school boards, and they counter what they hear almost instantly from their liberal county attorney that's telling them all the wrong information. So we are super excited about this. But the story gets even better, because having built this alternative, we decided that the Founding Freedoms Law Center also actually should go directly to bat at the Virginia School Board Association. So with a plaintiff in hand, Sabrina Civils, we actually set out to reveal the millions of dollars that are paid by county tax dollars, your money, to this school board association for this indoctrination. We're funding this indoctrination. And so essentially we went to find that out, and the bottom line is right now the VSBA is hiding these funds, claiming to be a private body, yet they're receiving all of our tax dollars. So they're claiming to be a private body free from transparency. But already, in our first pretrial motion, the Hanover Circuit Court agreed that Founding Freedom's Law Center has pled that if the facts that they've pled, if they prove true at trial, could establish that VSBA is in fact a public body and subject to transparency and accountability. Virginia wins when indoctrination stops. But whether you're a half glass empty perspective or a half glass full kind of person, Virginia stands at a critical juncture. In just 2 years, we face a ballot measure that threatens to dramatically increase the number of abortions, not only affecting thousands in Virginia's unborn, but also potentially drawing in thousands more from across the South. Democrats introduced the enabling legislation for affirmative, unrestricted abortion rights and have announced that its passage is their primary goal. While amending the Virginia Constitution is a multi-year process, the length of time should not be mistaken as any lack of passion and drive to get this done. This pivotal moment could shift Virginia to become the abortion capital of the South, an outcome our organization is dedicated to prevent. Our organization is uniquely positioned to lead the charge against the abortion lobby and influence public opinion towards life. Now, you're probably thinking, but how are we going to win this fight in Virginia when other states, some even more red than we are, have failed in their efforts? Let me tell you how. Well, the first thing is, to be honest with you, and this is the main thing, is that we aren't going to wait until it gets to our ballot in 2026. We're going to start changing hearts and minds right now. The effort to change hearts and minds has to start right now. No other state that we've seen have this battle has had 2 years lead up time, has known this is coming. Shame on us if we don't do the hard work to be ready when this hits us in 2026. Furthermore, we actually do benefit from the hard lessons learned in other states. Weekly, I'm on calls discussing what worked, what didn't, and what needs to be considered in the future. With plans for nuanced polling, message testing, and targeted campaigns, we're positioned to win the message battle by going on the offense. And the earlier we're resourced to start, the more time we have to run sample messages in test markets and adjust and learn as we go along to make sure that we are moving the needle on people's view about life. There's so much more I could tell you about this. But what I want to tell you is that while we work out in front of the battle, we're way ahead of the battle, we're also going to work simultaneously to prevent that ballot from ever getting to the ballot box, to prevent that from ever coming. And that is the facts that concurrently we'll be running an effort with our Family Foundation Action, our 501c4, more political arm, to win back a biblical worldview House of Delegates in 2025, which could actually stop that ballot. Change in the House control means the amendment stops dead in its tracks. Success there means avoiding a very costly and divisive ballot fight. But in the meantime, we will have been changing hearts and minds anyway, right? That sounds like the Virginia we want to see. Family Foundation Action boasts an impressive win record despite the headwinds that conservatives face here in Virginia. Our history of leading successful ballot campaigns, including the original defining traditional marriage in our state constitution, but also in recently defeating gambling at the ballot box in Richmond 2 years in a row, shows our capacity to win against formidable odds. Our sister organization, TFF Action, was an integral part of the 2021 elections that got us our fantastic lieutenant governor, governor, and attorney general. Imagine a Virginia where every life is valued, where communities come together to support both the born and unborn, and the women that find themselves in these moments, creating a culture of care and compassion that serves not only as a model for the South, but the whole nation. We can turn the tide in this fight against abortion with a win here and help provide a roadmap for the rest of the country as they fight these battles. This is a hill that we can fight on, we must fight on, and we must win, a win that has to echo across the entire country. It's been reported that John Stonestreet will often say, "Culture is not changed by Christians complaining about it, but by Christians contributing to it." No matter how you see the state of our Commonwealth today, whether it's glass half empty or half full, the question is, what are you willing to do to impact the state of our Commonwealth for tomorrow? Frederick Douglass wrote, "I prayed for freedom for 20 years, but received no answer until I prayed with my legs." Some of you have been praying for our Commonwealth and its leaders. Some of you have been a part of doing something about our Commonwealth. Tonight, I just hope we all double down our commitment to join the Family Foundation, both in prayer and in action, to take back our Commonwealth. Thank you.
All right, well, I just love how you are a glass full kind of person, as you put it. I love that you're bringing us hope that we could have a challenge, a good challenge of doing something that sets a roadmap for the rest of the nation, that we could do something that sets a precedent, especially on this abortion issue, that echoes around the entire nation. I thought that was really inspiring.
Well, I mean, the bottom line is we can sit around and twiddle our thumbs and be frustrated about the situation, or we can do something. And I think that we are not that far. You know, people think of Virginia as like, oh, are we going, you know, are we going blue? Are we going red? We really are struggling through that battle. And so it's up to those of us that want to see Virginia as a place where we honor human life. It's up to us to push that over the edge, to really make our Commonwealth a place that protects human life, that understands it, that honors it, that, you know, has an appropriate safeguard in the abortion arena.
Yeah, you use that John Stone Street quote, yeah, that part of the problem with our culture is we have too many Christians complaining instead of contributing.
Right, this is the thing. Like, it doesn't help if we just sit around and all, you know, I mean, you know, people joke about it, but like, you know, everybody's watching Fox News getting all amped up, but then what are we doing about it? And a lot of times we look at elections and we have a lot of people see the election results and they aren't what we want them to be. And they're really upset and they're like, devastated. It's kind of like if you were that passionate about it before and had done the five extra things, got your friends, yeah, and done, you know, worked the poll and whatever else, you know, then maybe we wouldn't be in this spot. So let's get energized ahead of what we need to do, not after when we get frustrated.
All right. How can people take the first steps toward doing that?
Well, I mean, obviously they have to be zoned in our email alerts because you have to know what's going on. So if people aren't getting our email alerts, go to familyfoundation.org, sign up for our email alerts, because it's just hard to stay current. The news is not going to give you the, yeah, full picture. So I think that's probably the most important thing for this moment right now. Yeah. And we're still in governor veto land, so I can't, you know, end a show, you know, in the middle of this period of time where the governor still can act without saying. On our website, there's also a page where you can look at what the governor has done and what's still left to be done, and we encourage people to contact, yeah, him.
In the meantime, you can share our podcast. So make sure to share the Speak Up Virginia playlist if you want to get more people hearing about what's going on and actually contributing. Thank you so much for joining us today. Remember, we are stronger when we speak together. We'll see you next time.